When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
TalkSTL.com, Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the War Room of the O'Keefe Think Tank, this is Real Spoilers 168, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
It's a misleading title.
Well, we will get to that. Let's introduce ourselves first. Slow your roll there, young man.
Easy.
We will go around the table and people can introduce themselves.
This is Dan.
This is Joe.
And this is Tom. Kevin is once again out getting engagement photos. And so...
Making salsa.
Which is sadly not a euphemism.
Nope.
He's literally making salsa.
Just cutting up tomatoes.
Yeah. You know those things when you ride the rides and then they like try to get you to buy the photo and you're like, no, I just wanted to see it. Cool, thanks.
Kevin
and
bought the
like,
photos.
He buys every single one. Like, I'm like, wow.
I hope for his
he's the guy.
Sake, he bought the photo pass. Like,
is that a thing?
Yeah.
I got all those last time, but I bought you if you buy a photo pass, like, they just throw it all in a card and you get them all at the end. So you get the ride ones and the photographers throughout the park. We're talking about Disney World.
Yeah.
And so it's like $120 or something. And you know, we did seven days at the park. And, so like that's worth it for 7 days, and then that way it's like if I didn't feel like fishing out my camera or whatever, and so I would never just like I need that picture of me on the log flume, but when it was already built into the package, it's like sure, and it's all just sitting on your when you log into your account, it's all just there.
Oh really?
So I was gonna ask you about it. You think it's worth it?
Because
I'm gonna have a 4 year old when
and
we
how
go.
Long are you gonna be there?
2 days.
I don't think it's worth it for 2 days.
Okay, we're only going 2 days.
Yeah.
She's four. And we're only going to
Magic
Kingdom.
I wanted to take mine as well, but I was like, man, she's not going to get it at four. But she might. Like,
she's totally... Like, a year ago, Ellie was like, I don't know. And now we're like, oh, my God. We took her to Disney on Ice. Okay, how about this? There's a local company that does appearances.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get them in trouble, but I think Disney's cool with it as long as they don't misrepresent the characters. So she went to a restaurant to see Anna and Elsa, and it was magical.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
They're real. Like, they are.
But I will say at four, it's going to be ultimately more for you than for her.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
But she's not going to remember.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you know, like where this summer we're going to do a Disney cruise. We're taking the kids. And and Brian's been before, but he's got
zero memories.
Zero recollection.
You know? Although Katya is still telling us that she thought Anna was the better singer at her birthday party.
So
I was like, yeah. I was like, okay. Sorry, Elsa.
Let it go.
So, oh, look at you. Well done.
Yes, I'm the first one to ever make that.
Yeah, right.
So I guess. I guess you do shameless plug. Sorry, I didn't get to do, and I just got a message that apparently I forgot to mention a League of Show Share on a past episode on our Gods of Egypt episode.
I just saw it.
So
we're amiss.
Pranav Anand. I hope I'm saying
that's
that
our James
right.
Bond guy.
Yeah, I thought he was the one that was like, "Why are you calling me there? You're James Bond guy."
I'm pretty sure that's the same guy.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, if not, he'll correct us.
Yeah.
And I think he might have shared it after I had collect, like I'll go through like on Saturday typically and like collect them all. We record on Sundays, and so sometimes people share in that interim, or I might have just missed it. That is also a very that is a very possible scenario that I just missed it. So we apologize. But look at this. You're the only League of Show Share getting mentioned on this episode.
Yeah.
Because I didn't collect anybody's from this week, because if you can go back and listen to the beginning of the last episode, which will explain why I haven't collected anybody's signature. Or not signature, but name.
Or signature.
Or signature for League of Show Sharers. So, don't forget, we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. It helps us a lot. It really does. We're not just saying that. We're not asking you for money. We're just asking you for a couple minutes of your time. You're on iTunes anyway. Go in there and say something nice, and it helps us tremendously. It helps us generate new listeners, which satisfies our ego enough to keep doing this.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, and so we're not asking for money. We're just asking to be loved. So there. And while you're there, you can subscribe, and we will show up like magic in your music rectangle box. So that is your shameless plug for the episode. We will now turn our eyes to 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yes.
We will let Joe, our resident synopsisizer, get to synopsizing.
So, as I said previously, I'm not really sure what to make of the title yet. And we'll get into that as we go forward. So the movie opens up with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who I haven't seen her since, I forgot she was in Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, she was Ramona Flowers.
She was Ramona Flowers, but I also in Grindhouse, Death Proof. She was in that as well.
Yeah, see, I don't remember her in that.
She's the, she's the gal that they leave behind as, like, collateral to drive the car.
The cheerleader?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she is, there's no audio with this opening probably 3-minute sequence where she is, you're kind of, like, getting an idea that she's a clothing designer and, all of a sudden, like, she's packing frantically, and then she kind of bolts. She's on the phone for a minute, and, like, I'm not great at reading lips, but it's kind of like she's in the middle of, like, you can tell, but just the way she's emoting that she's in the middle of an argument, something to the along the lines of, well, what do you expect me to do, or what am I supposed to do, things like that. And she bolts, and she takes off, and she leaves behind what I thought was an engagement ring, but I guess it was a wedding ring. And she's just driving, like, she's driving out to the country. And I, like, when I saw the bridge, I initially thought we were in New York. And I was
right.
Like, okay,
I did too.
If we're in New York, then I could see where this is going to tie into the original Cloverfield, which was from, like, 2006. Does that sound about right? 2005?
Is it
sooner than that? Or later than that?
I think it's
2008.
Like, I was going to say it's like seven years old.
Yeah. Okay.
Like,
which, if you haven't seen, fantastic. It's a great little movie. I really enjoy it.
It's like I described it at the time as it's Godzilla from the point of view of the extras.
Yes. Yeah.
Because normally in a monster movie, you're at the top echelon from a point of view standpoint, right? You're with the scientist or the president answering the red phone.
Right.
We have a monster attack. Yeah. Blah,
or
blah,
Bryan Cranston.
Like, yeah. Like, you know, you're on the inner circle of what's going on.
Right.
Where in Cloverfield, it flipped the script and it was like you were just at ground level. All you know is, by the way, everything you know about the world is wrong, and there is a giant monster, and it's going to kill you now.
Something is attacking
you. And
you
should run.
Yeah.
And that's all it really told you.
Right.
And
run and figure it out.
Run and figure it out. You don't even know why it's called Cloverfield.
Nope.
And that's the extent of it.
And they never tell you.
They don't. No. They just, I think, what was it, the end, the film canister was labeled Cloverfield?
Oh, maybe that's what it was, yeah.
But that's all you find out. And so
it had Lizzie Kaplan in it.
It did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was I think. Actually, I think T.J. Miller is in that.
Yes, he is.
Wow. Yeah.
It's been so long since.
But that's like it's right at the height of found footage.
Found footage.
Yeah.
And then they did like usually the found footage is the horror genre.
Yeah.
But this one is a Godzilla movie.
It's one of the stronger ones. It was a little bit of a stretch as to how their battery lasted so long. But,
yeah, right.
But overall, I mean, once you get past that, it's definitely one of the better found footage movies.
Well, it's also a found footage that might be probably the budget-wise the most expensive one. Because,
has to be.
It's got
a bunch of CGI
really solid effects.
Yep.
Yeah, it was like a $25 million movie.
Yeah, you didn't see that in found footage movies. Also, just because of the fact that it is handheld. it makes it even more difficult because, you know, usually when they add in like CGI, a character or something like that, you've got a fixed point on the camera and you can do tracking fairly easy.
Right.
This one is just like bouncing all over the place.
Yeah, bouncing all over the place to try to, you know, it's like, well, now we're going to put this fake character in, but now we have to, I mean, there's a lot more. I think it was harder for them to integrate.
Probably. Yeah. So. Actually, I think the nice part about that is there's no real, like, you don't really, there's no interaction between quote unquote real people and the monster. Like, I think there's one scene where Lizzie Kaplan gets attacked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't she die? Does she die in that movie?
Yeah, she
explodes or something. I don't know.
Yeah, she got infected.
They don't really tell you what that is.
Yeah, like if you get touched by one.
If you get bit or something. Yeah. Yeah. Like they don't tell you anything.
Because you see it in the silhouette, right? Yeah. You take her behind
you. Yeah. It's a very effective movie. I mean.
Yeah. So, okay.
And you don't see the monster until really the... I mean, you see
the
it.
No, you don't see it until like the last...
But then you really see it.
Yeah. Right.
Now, but here's... Okay, so this is ostensibly supposed to be a Cloverfield sequel.
Is it?
Or taking place somehow in the Cloverfield universe.
It's in the universe.
Okay.
So, here's my question. Could you explain your iPhone 6 to me?
So, and yes, there are some weird little...
And what? Well, first of all, I would say, like, this movie, the last 10 minutes of this movie are going to be very, very polarizing.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But if this is supposed to be taking place in the same timeline, like, her phone would not exist in 2008.
Correct.
True.
And that's a pretty glaring error to me.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think that it is... Like, obviously, when you put that title on a movie, like, you put that title on the movie,
and let's just spoil it. Like, at the end, there's aliens, and what you can't put that title on the movie, have it end with a scene like that, and then say there's
a glaring continuity.
It's supposed to be taking place in 2008.
Yeah.
Is that what we're to believe?
I think that's the disadvantage of including technology in your films.
Yes.
Right. You know, you don't. Like, I think in that one, he has, like, a BlackBerry, and nobody uses that thing anymore. You know, like, I don't...
When did iPhones come out?
So, we're in the, what, sixth generation? So...
I thought it came out around the time of this movie, because I vaguely remember being at this screening, and somebody, like, had just gotten an iPhone, and they were very excited about it.
Yeah.
Hang on. When did iPhones come out? Is it weird that I'm asking Google that?
Well, then
June 29th, 2007. But they were very difficult to get at first.
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. So
yeah.
And this movie, Cloverfield, came out, I think, in January of 2008. So it would have been, you know.
They would have just been on the market.
6 months.
Sorry, it says March. God, I could have swore this came out in. Wait. I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong
thing. So it was a few months old.
No, it came out January 18th of 2008.
They're still relatively.
Yeah, good. I think that's that's one of the disadvantages.
And they were big, bulky. Not
they were giant. Yeah, they looked like an iPod.
Yeah
except they were, longer.
Yeah, so like she clearly was using. She was absolutely using an iPhone.
She
wasn't using a 5S or she might. Yeah. It was a six.
I think I'm willing to let that go, just because like when you include technology in your movies, you're going to date yourself within a year. Like anything you use in a movie, unless you're like Star Trek and you're using
the reason I disagree with giving them a pass is that the first one's a found footage movie,
right?
And so technology is a character in your film.
Yeah.
You made
technology a character in your film,
right?
Not just something people utilize. Yeah. And so
there was an original script, and the ending of the original script is not the ending that we saw.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the original script.
It doesn't end with aliens. It doesn't. Okay, go ahead.
No, the original script. We're gonna jump ahead. She gets out of the bunker. And it's Chicago in the distance.
Because
we're outside of Chicago. And she goes over a hill. That's where it was set.
It's the original script.
I'm sorry.
She's in the outskirts. She is over a hill and she sees a completely devastated and decimated Chicago. It's gone. And the movie ends.
Yeah.
That's it.
So
there's no explanation like what happened.
I would even with that be like, now I believe we're in a Cloverfield sequel.
Yeah, like, they didn't have anything.
Because this can't take place after Cloverfield because the idea of when she's in the bunker and it's getting explained to her like the theories of what might have happened, I think somebody would be like, what if we got attacked by monsters again? Yeah. Right? Like, I mean, We've seen how people react in a post 9/11 world.
Well, I think
whenever there's anything bad happens, like what if it was terrorists? Yeah. Like, well, you know, hey, you know, I went to the store. It's out of Lucky Charms. Oh, what if that was terrorists? Like that's our mindset, right?
Yeah.
And so,
no, terrorists would have come in, left the Lucky Charms, stolen the marshmallows.
Yeah, that is
that's
true.
A move.
That's, you'd open it up and it'd be like, it'd just be that filler.
But
that's
some like, ISIS
I,
stuff
so
right
I thought
there.
Of it as like it's a happening at the same time. So like she,
but
you know,
then you have the iPhone issue.
That's also correct.
I think,
yeah, right.
Because that was my thought. Yeah. But I'm like, but this is clearly present day, and that movie's and these filmmakers are too smart to not know that.
Yeah. Right.
It's the Cloververse, but I think it undermines. I think it undermines the movie by having it named this.
I think it does too. I do.
I think I think if they wouldn't have, you'd be like, what?
It would be more mind. It would have been more mind blowing.
Yes.
I think they did a disservice to themselves by calling it Cloverfield.
Yeah.
Because
it put you right there.
It ruined the they spoiled their own movie.
Correct.
Because if I had walked into this movie not knowing and she got in that last 10 minutes, I don't know if I would have hated it more or loved it more, but I definitely would have had a much stronger and more real reaction where the whole thing is going on because up till she escapes and you see the aliens, right? It's a very straight ahead, thriller.
Oh, this is it. This
it's a Twilight Zone.
This
episode.
Is something that I want to see on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
It's up just, to that point, I'm like, this would be so cool,
right?
Yeah, because you could do it.
You totally
single
could.
Set.
Yeah,
you would like, yeah, exactly.
This it's is all a stage like, play. It's three characters,
right? And I was just like, you know, it's and then it plays it so straight that if it didn't have that Cloverfield brand on it, you would. You would have your mind blown by that ending because you would just assume like this guy's crazy. This isn't the type of movie this is. And when it takes that left turn, literally and figuratively, you would be like, whoa, they went there.
Yeah.
Like,
they actually spoiled their own movie.
They did.
Right.
Yeah.
They did. And I mean, I guess it was the right call from a box office standpoint. Because does this movie make $23 million this weekend if it didn't have the Cloverfield brand?
The original name was The Cellar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I have to say that's
I mean so
that's
it,
not good.
It is, it
I mean,
is
that
a, been,
that no. sounds like a
it reminds me
Blue
of
Mouse.
Yeah Blum, yeah exactly yeah. It reminds me, do you remember that Twilight Zone episode where it's
the monsters are due on Maple Street?
No. That's a good one though.
Yeah, what's the one
where you know it's the Simpsons in a parody
How to Serve Man?
Yeah. And how to, you know, like that's how, that's what
how best to serve man.
Exactly.
How best to serve man dinner.
Yeah.
How to serve man for dinner.
It's exactly
yeah,
like
they kept scratching they, off. It was that. Yeah.
That's what I thought of when I saw that. Like at first you're like, okay, this guy is crazy.
He's off.
And then like the next scene, you're like, okay, he's a little off, but maybe he's telling the truth. Cause you get a scene where she kind of goes up to the top and you think she's going to get out. And then this person runs up to the door and like her face is all messed up and you're like, oh man, maybe he's telling the truth.
Well, to back up a little bit. So she's at a gas station.
Right. She's at a gas station and she's running
gas
away.
Station, and then a creepy truck pulls up and right off the bat, you're like, I mean, it is kind of like part of me was like, this kind of reminds me of an old Tales from the Dark Side or something like that. Yeah. We're like, it definitely felt like an anthology.
Yep.
You know, story. And you're like, oh, what are we doing? Like everything that you see,
Nothing by
showed by accident.
Yes, exactly.
Like every single thing they show, you're like, you're going to see that again.
Correct.
Like, and so she, you know, she's listening to her messages, and
like her,
also,
I guess her husband or fiance.
Yeah,
keeps
he's
calling
leaving messages
and,
on her iPhone 6.
So should we read anything into her husband/fiance?
As to what?
As
what
to the
happened?
Fact that
an
it's,
argument.
No, as to the fact that it's Bradley Cooper.
Oh, I didn't.
Are
even
you
know
serious?
That.
Yes,
I had no idea.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't.
You'd think after listening to Rocket Raccoon for 2 hours, I wouldn't pick up on his voice.
Yeah, but it was Bradley Cooper.
All right,
that's a major actor.
That's a huge actor.
And
so are you thinking that come a seek like 11 Cloverfield Lane, we see Bradley Cooper?
I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. But I mean, that's a huge actor to cast.
I do think that there is intention of having.
I think there absolutely is intention of a sequel.
Yeah,
yeah, a third one.
I know it would be another story in this universe.
They're saying that they want it to be more like an anthology, like you said, like an anthology series. They wanted to tell stories in this universe, and I guess you'll pick up tidbits from these stories where you can piece together a larger story.
Okay,
like Lost at its best. You know, like
No, Kevin's not here, and it won't be as bad.
Yeah, like I like to bag on. You're a defender of Lost, and I am. And part of the reason I get so mad at it is because at one point I loved it so much.
Yeah,
right. And at its peak, when it was really just firing on all cylinders, mm-hmm. I don't know that there was ever a better show on television.
To sidetrack, they knew.
Yeah.
And like it was during the third season, and that's when they said, can we have an end game? And they basically asked
it was
ABC
after the
to let them out.
Episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
The worst. And they asked ABC, and then it took them about, you know.
How many seasons did it go total?
Five? Six?
Okay. Yeah.
Six. 21 episodes.
But it took, because there was a writer's strike. It took a good half a season for them to sort of right the ship. And, you know, to get it back to like, okay, now to point it to the end game.
Right, yeah. Right.
But at that point, they had other characters and stuff
and then
like
the,
that.
I've never seen a single episode.
Their end game resolution was just not good, in my opinion.
Do you think it was them just being like, we gotta wrap this up now?
I think that because they couldn't end it quickly enough, people guessed their original ending. And they wanted to adjust, and then they couldn't come up with anything better. And then after going around telling everybody that wasn't what the ending was and that they had it wrong, they still kind of ended up doing that in a sideways way. In a sideways,
That last season, we basically were watching them in the afterlife.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
but they weren't dead. Well,
it was like a way station, and but
I had rewatched it after seeing it. Like I ended up rewatching it, and I actually enjoyed it better because
they digested it a little bit.
Well, like right off the bat, but you know, between Locke and Shepard, they like set it up. Like
they did. Like
they followed that through.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was so mad. I was convinced the whole time watching that show, as soon as it was over, I would buy it on Blu-ray and go back and immediately rewatch it and from beginning to end in like a week or something. And like I've never gone back to revisit the show. I was so.
If you do, I think you'll find. I did. I actually enjoyed it better, but I also knew like when to like go.
Yeah, well, I had to do that one. Yeah, but you know, at its peak was when it was telling you, like, you'd get these little clues, or there'd be something in the background decipher.
It was water cooler.
Like that was so much fun. It was like this,
and I don't know.
It was a good show. It was a good story, well told. But it also did all this other extra
the
stuff
universe.
In the background
right.
that you could dig into and have a lot of fun with if you wanted to enjoy it on that level.
The puzzles, the names, you know, looking at name like Faraday being or John Locke, and like actually looking at these the actual
as like
people.
An anagram.
They were character names based on real people. It was, you know,
so that was and that was fun.
Yeah,
and it's like we don't really have anything like that now. We don't have like sort of the extended universe puzzle world.
And people have tried it, but nobody's been able to replicate it because it all felt so forced. Like this felt fresh and organic, and it didn't feel forced. And so a lot of times when people have tried that on other shows, it just felt like we have to insert this clue, and they didn't have the balls to let people find the clue. They always let the camera linger a little too long, or somebody kind of looks at the camera, or there's some sort of winking.
www.lookhere.com.
Yeah, like here's like, well, when people would discover
on a chalkboard.
Yeah, people would discover things that they really weren't even meant to discover, like Oceanic Air, the airlines that they use. People were like, we found they're using that airline on Heroes. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And like, they were like, are these two shows connected? And it's like, no, the reason is Oceanic Air is a generic airline name because you can't use a real airline name
when the whole
point of the show is that plane crashed.
Yeah.
Like no one will let you do that.
Correct.
And they don't want to get sued. So they've all kind of figured out that Oceanic Air is like nobody's ever called an airline that. It's safe.
Yeah.
You're not going to get sued
by
an airline. Yeah, it's generic, right? Yeah. And so like that's why. Like there's also, you might have seen a picture of what's his name? The actor who played the dad on Married with Children.
Oh, Ed O'Neill.
Ed O'Neill. There's a picture of Ed O'Neill in Modern Family, and there's a picture of him from Married with Children, and he's reading the same newspaper with the same picture of a girl, and it's because that's all been cleared, and who pays attention to the newspaper?
Right.
And they're like, no wonder he's frustrated. He's been reading the same newspaper for 30 years. And it's like, but like, because it's all, they don't have to worry about.
I want to see that show where like the dad from Married with Children becomes the dad from Modern Family. Like, I want to see that progression. Like, where he's
getting
just,
all new.
Yeah, just, yeah, exactly. Just go all yeah. the way. I'd watch that show.
But but so yeah, people would really dig in. But we should probably talk about 10 Cloverfield Lane. You would almost think we didn't like it.
Yeah. Well,
and I really enjoyed it.
I have issues with it. Overall, I enjoyed it, but you normally when we avoid talking about the movies because we just didn't like it. Yeah. And I don't think that's true.
I mean, I thought it was fun. Despite the fact that I knew,
right?
I mean, I'm bummed because it's like I wish I didn't know. But I mean, so with you know, when our heroine wakes up,
we literally haven't gotten to the second scene.
She gets hit by a car and she wakes up attached to like a pipe. She's in this bunker and she's attached to this pipe.
Yeah, she's leg cuffed. I guess you could call it.
Yeah, like she's injured.
She's injured.
And she's got a brace on her knee.
Yeah, she's got an IV. She's got IV drips, so she's getting fluids.
Yeah, so
doesn't look like anything dubious going in.
No, it doesn't
look like fluids.
We don't know.
Well, that's what you know. What you know in TV land, it's like, well, she's got to get fluids.
Yeah, he even said like so. John Goodman, like she realizes that she's.
We eventually see him. He kind of comes in. You know, it's a little ominous when
see him from like his feet. And then it kind of pans up. Just to talk about John Goodman for a second, I forgot how much I love John Goodman.
He's so good.
Like, he's good. Like, I don't think he's ever bad in anything. Like, there was one where I saw, he was in something where I was like, man, he looks rough. And I don't know, like, I feel like he had lost a bunch of weight, and maybe that's like...
He's lost a bunch of weight since this, because if you see him now, he doesn't look anything like this. Yeah. This is definitely pre... weight loss John Goodman.
Yeah.
He makes it seem so effortless.
Yeah.
Speaking of the weight loss real quick, so has this been in the can for a while?
Yeah.
That's what we were just talking. Yeah.
Yeah, because like if you see him now, it's like, but he doesn't look anything.
Okay,
like
I didn't know if he put it back on.
No.
Like, that was my
no, so that's no. What like I, if I you see him I, right now, he's almost unrecognizable.
When I saw him in Red State, he looked sickly.
Yeah, he's always,
you know, but I think he had lost a bunch of weight and his skin was kind of loose.
Sure.
But then in this one I was like, oh man. But that's what, like, I think that John Goodman is one of those character actors, I guess.
Yeah, I would call him a character. John Goodman, God love him, he can't open a film.
No, probably not.
I mean, he did when it was like the Flintstones. So there was a period.
He was also riding high on that Roseanne money.
I don't think John Goodman opened the Flintstones. No, I think the Flintstones opened the Flintstones.
But I mean, there was definitely a period where he was like, A-list.
He was
a big name. Yeah. And he's still a big name, but I mean
he's Sully now.
But he's he's definitely a guy who like he does the job.
Yeah, and he does it well.
He's great. But I don't think he gets a movie greenlit.
I agree. I don't see that happening. But I mean it's like I always feel like when you see him, like
you're like, oh yeah, John Goodman.
He's going to do his job.
That's what I said. Harvey Bullock. Do it.
I still can't believe he didn't get an Oscar nomination that year that he did Flight, and there was another movie that he had a really major supporting role in that he just crushed it. Both of those movies, he crushed it.
Yeah,
and he didn't get nominated for either one. I can't remember the other one, but
which one was Flight? Was that the Denzel Washington one?
That was the Denzel Washington one, and he was like his drug dealer. Yeah, and he was so good. And then he turned around and did another movie where he played a character that was really different, and it was just like I was just like, oh, this has got to be his year.
Right.
Nothing. Yeah.
So. Yeah, we see him for the first time, and she has already, like, knocked over her IV, and, like, because all of her personal, she's wearing,
she's
like...
She's resourceful, off the bat.
And that's what I appreciate. Like, they don't make her... a victim or a damsel in distress. Like, she's not relying on anybody. She, like, from the get, you know, she's in, like, a pair of boy shorts and a tank top, so, like...
Yeah, she was.
She looks pretty good. So she, like, she knocks over her IV, and she takes the hook on the IV and, like, drags all of her stuff over.
She gets her phone.
Immediately goes for a phone, and she's like reaching up trying to find service.
No signal. Not in a big heavy bunker.
No, I guess not.
Especially in 2008.
Or 16.
Or 16.
Whichever.
Whatevs.
But if whatever it was attacked, they wouldn't have any signals anyway.
Yeah.
He walks in and he's very ominous, and immediately I was like, okay, this is going to be kind of like that. Do you remember Black Snake Moan?
That's where
I thought we were going with this, and I was like, okay, she's trapped, and then, but like you see flashes from the get that he like has good intentions, or what you assume to be good intentions.
Yeah.
Where he's like, he's fixing her. He doesn't really talk about her going at, like, he doesn't make any aggressive motions to her.
No.
Like she is on, she's on retreat almost immediately, which makes sense.
Well, she is
handcuffed, cuffed, or knee cuffed to a pipe and she's in scantily clad
in a basement.
Yeah. But he immediately just picks up the IV and says, look, you've been out fluids, for a couple of days. You need fluids. I wish, like, if it, I immediately put myself like into a position like that, where I was like, if my knee is all buckled up like that,
were you wearing boy shorts?
I was, yeah. Okay, that's what I wear anyway.
Yeah. By virtue of definition,
they are boy shorts.
Any shorts you wear would be boy shorts. Yeah.
But like, so I've had knee injuries in my athletic career. Those are long behind me
because of your time in the adult film industry.
Well, you know, there's a lot of like squats and never mind.
Squat and thrust three, isn't that your, yeah, that was your big,
actually,
that was your
it's,
AVN,
it's half hole. Like
squats, was this was this a fetish porn?
Yeah,
hey, whatever pace.
Yeah.
But like she never asks about her knee, not once. And like I was like, ask about your knee. Like, you are obviously in a lot of pain. Right. You've got this weird brace on your leg.
Yeah.
Why don't you be like, hey, what happened to my leg? Anything else? Okay. So like he's just kind of giving her food, and it's just like he is super creepy, but he's not like super ominous. Like he's giving her what looks like
twirling his mustache.
Exactly. So as we progress, like she ends up like setting fire to a piece of clothing, I think is what it was.
Yeah.
And she whittles down, she takes the handcuff key that he gives her, cause
yeah, you know,
and she whittles down one of the crutches
into
like a spike.
Yeah.
And I was like,
and she's waiting for a long time to
jam. And like when she like, she gets tired and she's like, oh, fine.
Damn it.
I immediately thought of You're Next.
Yeah.
Where like the gal is completely unassuming from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as all hell breaks loose, she turns into a crazy Kevin McAllister.
Yeah.
So yeah, she ends up putting like a piece of cloth up in like the duct, and it sets fire to it, and then he comes in, and she kind of clocks him, I think.
Yeah, she gets him in the shoulder.
Right, and then pushes out of the way, and
yeah.
Then yeah. So now we're introduced to a second person.
Yeah, because we hear a ruckus, and we hear him getting mad.
I can't believe you did that, and like things are shaking.
You're like, what's happening?
And it's all done off camera.
Yeah,
like, you don't know anything, and then he comes back and like slams the door.
Yeah.
And closes her in.
Yeah, but there's a ruckus.
There is a ruckus. So, like, she wakes up, and then the door is propped open. So she gets herself together. She walks outside, and this is where we're introduced to this other character.
Emmett.
And then he's just, like, we find out that Emmett was just a little country boy who lived in the same area, who just helped out build this bunker. And he's like, when all hell broke loose.
He was like, I know the crackpot that built the bunker. Yeah.
I'm going to go there.
Yeah, he's not a kidnapped. He's not a victim.
No, he's like, she's like, you weren't kidnapped. She's like, no. He's like, I came here on my own.
Yeah.
And he explains, he's like, look, something happened out there, and I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
He's like, there was big flashes of light. I have no clue. And she's like, don't you think it could have been lightning? And she's like, I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
So like immediately you have this other character who's completely unassuming, who's like, look, he's not lying. Like something happened out there.
Yeah. I mean, this movie toys with like, maybe something did happen.
That's
maybe
what I'm saying. It's like that Twilight Zone episode where it's just kind of like, oh, all right.
Yeah, it does. Like,
oh, we're in trouble.
Sure.
Right. So another part of the character that I really enjoy is she is so cynical. Like, she's not immediately like, okay, or you know, you're right, whatever. She is questioning the entire time, and she doesn't really stop questioning until a certain point where she ends up like running up to the top, and she's going to get out.
Well, okay, yeah. So I mean, this is like their first like I guess family dinner.
Yeah, which is super awkward.
Yeah,
it's awkward, and we do get a sense like they're. Emmett's just trying to talk.
I think he's
trying to have conversation.
Emmett seems kind of like that guy who's like nervous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And he doesn't know when to stop. And we do see some very ragey moments from John Goodman's character.
Right.
Where it's like,
oh, maybe he is.
Okay.
Crazy.
He's got some issues.
Yeah. He's got some problems.
And, but she's grabbed the keys off of his belt loop.
Yeah. It was something very like she kept asking Emmett to pass or something. And like there was like a very.
And he got mad.
Like
mad.
I don't know if the touch was on the accident.
No, she was clearly. She made a conscious choice to be flirty with Emmett in order to get a reaction
on
John Goodman.
Okay.
And
so
did.
I thought. I knew that like. Yeah, she did. I thought like. when she was asking for stuff initially, I was like, well, that's maybe she's building something. Like, I don't know what she's doing.
she's making
like a bomb or something. I don't know.
Pepper bomb.
Yeah. But then she they touch hands and John Goodman flips off the handle, gets in her face and like becomes super dominant with her and is like, you will
and
say
he plays
you're sorry.
It really well because it's like you feel like he is attracted to her.
Yes.
And kind of is like, you will be my wife in this new world order.
Yeah.
But he never actually gets rapey.
Nope. No.
But there's this creepy sense of entitlement and expectation.
Yeah.
Which I know is a form of rape. I don't mean it like that.
Well,
but
he says that you'll learn to love cooking.
Well, he's also you will tell me you're sorry and that you will behave.
Yeah. And yeah. There's definitely expectation.
Right. I saved you from the outside world.
Yeah.
You owe me.
There will be a quid pro quo.
Yes.
I don't expect it today.
Yeah.
But I expect it.
Yes.
And I will give you time to come around to this.
Right.
But you will come around to it. And,
right.
But it was interesting because it was never said. It was all through his performance, which was wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. His body language in this movie.
Yeah. Like,
is,
and he
so,
doesn't like, he also, it was very subtle and nuanced in a way that like, it communicated that subtlety of like, you will be mine.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen today, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a nice rapist, basically.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He's also, the advantage that he has is because he's so big.
Right.
Like, anytime he's on screen, he engulfs
he's
the
imposing.
Screen. Yeah, he's a huge man.
And the cinematography in this is great, and which sounds a little counterintuitive, because 90% of the movie takes place in a bunker.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you know, in one room.
Pretty
you
much.
Know? And so you would think, but when she goes off into the other parts of the bunkers, as she will momentarily, you always know where she's at in relation to the other people.
Yeah.
Right. You never get an idea of where are they really at. It never feels sometimes in movies like this, it's two separate sound stages where they film this.
And
clearly it has to be.
Right.
But it never felt like it.
Well, it's also like we said,
it adds to the tension because you're
it's very claustrophobic.
I mean, it's a very uncomfortable, everything about it. You're like, ugh.
It's like a stage. Like you said, it's like a stage play where you see John Goodman and Emmett in one. And if you look to your, to your right,
she's right there.
She is right. You can see her.
That room.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's interesting about how the film flips when she does get out, because it goes from so claustrophobic to how do I get out?
Wide open.
It gets wide open, but now it's shit, where do I go? Now I have the entire world, but I can't get away from anything.
There's a great line where he says, you have a car alarm, you have a house alarm, you have all these alarms, but when they go off, what do you do? What do you do about that?
So
there's a scene at the end.
They keep peppering his character with enough sensibility that you're like, well, he's not completely gone.
Yeah.
He's not completely wrong.
Right. And there's a scene where it comes back where her car alarm goes off
and
she has nothing. She doesn't know what to do. And I was that's a really it's a very subtle callback to that line, but it's a very smart callback.
But she during their first dinner, she does manage to get the keys. And
right. So she's running up. He's already shown her. He's like, look, this is the airlock. You can look out here and just look for yourself. So she looks outside and she sees the truck. Initially she sees the truck
that
runs her off the road. So she starts
with some red paint.
Red paint.
Much like her car.
No, her car was black.
Was it?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Okay. I could be wrong. But
it was red.
It could have been. It was night time when I saw the car. So it was dark.
I was thinking of the overhead shot.
Right on. Oh, maybe you're right. Okay. So she runs back. They go back downstairs and she's like, look. And the best part is the set is so small that these two characters are trying to have a private conversation and they can't.
No, nope.
Earshot
and
or anything.
That was one of my minor complaints about the movies. When they sneak off and do things, and I'm like, they seem to be able to sneak off quite a bit.
Yeah.
That, you know,
as if Joe and I tried to sneak off right now, we're just going to be right there.
Right. Yeah.
Well, what do you think about this?
I don't know.
Do you think he knows?
I'm not sure.
I'm here.
Oh,
I'm right here.
Okay. he takes her upstairs and she looks outside
she's
and she can't see anything.
Two dead pigs.
Yeah. That's what he's saying. It's like the air is contaminated. This is what happens to you.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, that's weird, but all right. Mm-hmm. So she goes back downstairs and they end up having this conversation where she's like, he hit me with his goddamn car. and kidnap me.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, what should we do? So they kind of devise this plan where, so initially she runs up, like after this, that after the dinner scene, mm-hmm. she takes the keys and she gets up to the second part of the airlock and there's a car outside.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, this is like, you're totally full of crap. Like there's a car here.
Somebody's clearly alive. There's and a car with the lights on.
Right. This woman come like pops up in the door and like half of her face has started to like disintegrate.
Yeah.
And she's got like this weird skin thing.
And she says, it only touched me a little.
Right. Right. She's like, I'm fine. It doesn't hurt that bad. Like I'm okay. And like he, so she's stuck in, there's two doors, the door going outside and then another door going back inside.
Second airlock. Like an airlock.
Right. So he's screaming at her, don't open the door, don't let her in, don't let her in.
Right.
She's like, she's, she said she's okay. And then like, finally she realizes, and this is the point where she kind of becomes complacent in the movie where she's like, maybe there is maybe
something I'm, definitely
something
happened
is wrong.
Out there.
Yeah. Something now, is wrong out there. What it is, we don't know.
Right.
But so she goes back downstairs and this is where you kind of like, they become kind of like this unit, this, I don't want to use the word family unit, but.
No, but does become it
familial.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, they're playing board games.
Right,
or,
right.
Yeah,
they're like, working on the puzzle.
Yeah.
Like, there's pieces missing. So then there's an incident where like the air filtration unit stops. Like, and, and he's like, you're the only one that can go. And at this point I was like, don't go. Don't. Like, you want me to climb in these tiny little air ducts?
Well, yeah, and we've also heard, like, the story, like, he used to have a daughter.
Yeah,
and
Megan.
It's actually very touching when he talks about his daughter, because at first we think the daughter died.
You're right.
Well, we don't know what
and
happened.
You know, that's because thing, he gives Mary Elizabeth Winstead his daughter's clothes. He says it's his daughter's clothes, and we see a picture of his daughter,
right?
Maybe.
And there was that great line where he's talking about, like, she was way into like Paris and France.
Yeah. And we hear all
she's
this
like
stuff,
what do you want to be when you grow up? And she's like, French. Like,
and you can see like he's up, still kind of shooken up over
right
it. But yeah,
so he's watching Pretty in Pink.
Yeah, and then the airlock. There's some blockage.
Something going on up there. So she ends up. She's the only one small enough to climb through the air ducts.
Through the air ducts.
And like, there's another scene where like she looks like, down.
So
and,
you
looks
take a claustrophobic movie and you make it even more claustrophobic.
You didn't think it was
the
possible.
Tightest pace possible.
But like, there's a good scene where like she's crawling through the air duct and like looks down and he's right there and he's like, "Are you okay?" And she was like, yeah, this just really sucks.
Yeah.
And but like, so it was a nice little moment. Mm-hmm. So then she ends up getting to the airlock and she fixes it and she sees that there's another place to get out. So
yeah,
she
kind of open
up,
area.
Yeah, she climbs up the ladder and there's a lock on it. She doesn't really think anything of it. And she's looking up and she sees like scratches on this mirror or this piece of glass. And she kind of just pushes the whole thing back and it's help backwards. So like it was written from the inside with blood on the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, oh, all right. And she ends up coming down the ladder and she finds the earring.
Yeah.
So at this point, she's like, okay.
That was on the girl.
Right. They go back and they flip through the pictures.
Who he said was his daughter.
And like initially, like I was like, whoever this Megan person is, she's dead.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think she's alive.
Yeah, he makes it sound like his ex-wife
like took the kids, took her, like he lost custody and,
against him, and they left to Chicago.
Right. So then he, like, as Emmett is looking at the picture, and he was like, that's not his daughter.
Yeah.
And, like, our other, Michelle, was that her name, Michelle?
There
was
some girl.
He's like, that's the girl I went to high school that disappeared. And she was like, time out, what?
Yeah.
She's like, she told me that this is his daughter. And he was like, that's not his daughter at all.
Yeah.
And like obviously in the picture there's the earring in question. So now they've devised this plan.
And we see another photo.
Oh, we did. Of another girl or the same girl?
Of that girl.
Wearing
the clothes that she's now wearing.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's got his arm around her very comfortably.
Very comfortably.
And that's when we know, okay, he's definitely not a good
guy. We got bad intentions.
He's bad.
Yeah. So this is where they devise their plan. They're like, look, they figure out he kind of goes to since she's a clothing designer, she builds a hazmat suit out of a shower curtain.
Yeah, with a big duck on it, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah, I thought that was good. So he kind of like, he lays the groundwork and he's like, look, she was up by that thing, like up in, you know, who knows what could be contaminated. Maybe we should.
Yeah, he plants the seeds of possible contamination on everything she touched.
Right,
so.
In the shower. So they end up throwing a shower curtain away. Our two heroes come back and fish it out, and they, you know, they keep working on whatever they're working on. Flash forward a day or so, 2 days, and they call Emmett, or not Emmett, but John Goodman's character calls them into the living room and pushes on this little thing, and then there's like a giant vat.
Yeah.
And like, when I saw the vat, I was like, oh, this is not going to end well for anybody. This is going to be awful.
Vats aren't typically a good
vats thing. Are never, vats, yeah. Vats and rebar. Like, if you see either one of those things, bad things are going to happen.
Yeah.
So he pulls the vat into the kid, into the bathroom.
Yeah.
And he kind of says, what were you doing with these? And it's like a piece of...
Oh, he explains what it's in the vat.
It's like acid. acid that will melt everything.
Except for vats.
Vats. You can't melt a vat. That's the way that works. If you've learned anything in movies.
Special vats.
Yeah, special vats. So he has like a scissors, and I don't remember what the...
Like tape?
Yeah, I guess it was tape. And he was like, why did you have these? And like, they're both like... And, you know, earlier in the movie... Mary Elizabeth Winstead kind of gives this story how she saw this dad jerking on his daughter's arm and like being super and he ends up hitting her, and she's like I did what I always do when situations get hard, is I turn around and walk away, which leads us to, you know, realize what happens, what's going on with the boyfriend / fiance husband. So like, she, you could tell, I think in this moment she was gonna, like, she was about to admit that, like, I did it, but like Emmett steps up and he's like, nope, it was all me. He's like, I wanted to get your gun and I wanted her to respect me the way she respects you. I'm really sorry. And like, he, John Goodman's character, goes, okay, I accept your apology. Now, in my horror movie brain, I've seen enough of these where I was like, nah, this is going to end one of two ways.
Yeah.
Either you're going into the vat or he's going to shoot you.
Yeah.
And he shoots him like point blank in the brain. another weird thing where like, there should have been blood splatter everywhere.
We saw a little bit.
There was a little bit. But not on her. Like, no. It would have been on her, too.
Keep it a PG-13.
They did. Yeah.
They got it.
They have to. Yeah. I totally get that.
And for and this movie's very intense, especially
for being
a PG-13 movie.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, they do it. It's all based on mood. Like, you know,
absolutely.
we talked about how the 70s horror films last week were built on mood, and this is the exact same way.
Yeah.
So now he's like, oh, it's just me and you.
This,
like, don't worry about it.
It was always supposed to be this way.
And like, do you want, well, we're going to change it up and we're going to do ice cream for dessert.
And he's like, I got to do a little cleanup.
Yeah.
So you go over here.
So she is like, you know what? We're done. Oh, no, she gets caught.
Well, like, okay. So yeah, he's obviously cleaning up. And then when he comes back,
she is frantically trying to get her stuff together.
He's coming. She hears him. She hides like her makeshift gas mask and hides her suit.
Right. And he ends up.
And he comes walking in. And I honestly thought the most frightening thing is when he walks in and he's freshly shaven.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing, is this entire time he's had a beard.
Now it's date night.
Right.
And you're like, okay, now this is officially the entire time his
hair is kind of
rough. He looks like he's been living in a bunker.
But now he walks in and he's wearing like a button up shirt and like khaki pants.
His hair is nice.
Yeah. And he's shaved.
And it's terrifying.
It's same deal. But also, like, he's such a hulking individual that when he walks into the door, he takes up the door.
Yeah.
Plus he's shaved.
And he said, let's mix it up. Dessert before dinner.
And she was just kind of like, no.
You want a cone or a bowl? Yeah. It says everything about it. You're just like, oh, God.
Everything about it. You're like, no. So he ends up seeing the hazmat suit under the mattress. And he's lifted up your mattress.
They do the usual, like, things hidden, but it's like she hides it in the air vent, but the air vent's slightly ajar.
Right. I was actually sitting
next to... And you're like, is this going to be one of those things where, like, oh, she just made it.
There was a woman sitting in front of me, and, like, when the screw falls out of the vent, she goes, oh, no.
Yeah, and that's exactly... I mean, it's... And there's no, like, you know, usually, like, we always see that, like, they build up the tension, and then it's like, whew. No, they didn't. Like, they went all in, like... He finds everything.
Well, I don't think he finds the mask.
He puts his hand in there and does the reach. But
when he turns around, he finds everything.
He sees it's poking out.
And that's
out
where, where does that go? Is that where she's locked up, like, where Emmett would sleep? Is that where we get to? And then, like, they do the ice cream thing?
No. This is after the ice cream thing.
Okay.
This is the escape.
Okay. So she, like, she gets the upper hand on him.
She grabs, she grabs the stuff.
Right. And then like she's taking
off. She runs.
And she ends up getting into the bathroom.
Where there's some dissolving Emmett happening.
There's a little bit of Emmett
and
in a
vat is still open.
Right. So she, like, again, she's not a damsel in distress. She immediately knocks over.
And he comes running in after
and
her.
Falls.
And
I was like.
She kicks the vat over.
Yeah, right.
And he just
falls face first.
Face plants into it.
And I was like. Oh, that's going to come back, and that's going to be really gross.
Yeah. But not as gross as they would have done with an R.
Yes. Right. Yeah, it was a PG-13 gross.
Yeah, because it was pretty mild considering how much of acid
he
should have been subjected to.
He should not have been able to, like, he was like.
He shouldn't have been able to get
out. I don't think he would have had legs.
What was the character in RoboCop?
Yeah, he should have been more like that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and he just
explodes.
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
Would have been more apt.
Yeah. So she ends up.
But he was willing to buy her for a dollar.
He was. Yeah. That's true. For free, actually. Yeah. Hit her with a car. So this, like, the acid corrodes a wire and it starts a giant fire.
Yeah.
So she gets to the air duct and
she puts on
earlier in the movie, he tells a story about how he would take whatever that was. What was that? Like
spray coolant.
Yeah.
It was canned air.
Right,
yeah, like you use it for like electronics and stuff.
Right,
like that.
So he's like, so we would freeze a drill sergeant or sergeant,
and it would freeze the door handle and
right,
knock
so
it
he
off.
Couldn't, so he couldn't get out. So she takes that idea and she sprays this lock, and she's frantically
she goes through the air vent
back to where, through the air vent.
He's trying to
stabby stab
through the air vent the whole time.
Another good, like, really super.
It's like everything we knew. Like, we saw where the little break. In the air vent, he knew.
He looks up. And I will say,
come back,
they do give you, like, so there's a scene where his hand comes up, and his hand is all mucky and gross, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, they're just going to break his hand off.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I thought, but they don't. Like,
they
do kind of,
but it's
super gross.
You can
like,
assume
there's like, skin
didn't.
And stuff, like, coming off of it.
It's disgusting.
It was gross. It was exactly what it needed to be.
Yeah.
Like, that's, yeah. So, she ends up spraying, breaking the lock, and she gets out, mm-hmm. and immediately she looks up, and there's, like, the flying V.
Yeah,
and she was like,
"There's a not a helicopter
Stratocaster."
Yeah,
yeah, no, it's from the Mighty Ducks.
Like, oh, sorry.
Yeah, there's a.
I'm not going to go with the sports reference. Have we met?
Yeah,
but there's a flock of birds flying away.
Yeah, there's some geese, and she's like,
"Oh, animals can live
exactly."
Like, so the air can't be so
bad. So she immediately takes it off.
Yeah,
she takes her mask off. And she could hear like birds and just different animal noises. Yeah. And she was like, everything's okay."
Yeah.
Like, everything is all right. Like, I've just survived this horrible experience. And then off in the distance, what do they see? A giant spaceship.
Yeah. Not a helicopter.
Not a helicopter.
A giant, not a helicopter.
Not a helicopter. So, like, the bunker explodes. And then the spaceship kind of rights itself and is coming this way. And she was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Which I liked. She was like,
it's coming.
I got nowhere
towards
to go.
Her.
I got nowhere to be.
It's funny because I really like this part for this reason, is that she's escaped these really tiny confines and she still has nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And she's got to figure out how to.
Yeah. Huge field.
She's
farmland.
She's just trapped in the open.
Right.
If not more so.
I think she was more so.
Because the thing was, is that he was a bad guy. He was going to hurt her. He was going to take advantage of his power in this world, this new world. But he was still right.
But he also...
Like, he was right about the other stuff. Like, a lot of times in these movies, like, they try to paint the villain as being wrong, and he wasn't. He was right. There was an attack. He was right to build this thing.
Yep.
He was right about all these other things. He just has this major flaw on this other side.
That he's crazy?
Yeah.
Right. He's so bad.
But it's like, I like that because that's how the world is.
Yeah. You know? It's also...
Yeah,
it was...
He said it could be aliens. It could be chemical warfare. The Ruskies.
The Ruskies, right. Which was great. Like, so yeah, Carpenter... Like, John Carpenter did this interview once, and he's telling a story about how he likes to direct his horror films. And he says, like, it's like sitting around a campfire, and, like, A, you can tell the story where the danger is out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this isn't... In here, you're safe, but when you walk out there, it's scarier. It's scary. But, like, the stories that I like to tell are it's scarier when the danger is around you. Like, the danger is... You are the danger.
Right.
And that's what this movie was. Like, it was both.
Yeah.
So, like, you had the danger inside the bunker.
He was safety and danger.
Exactly. Yeah. But then you get outside, and you got the danger outside,
and
too.
And now it's nothing but danger.
Nothing but danger.
Yeah.
So she kind of, like, she's running around, and this all of a sudden it's like something is coming through the cornfield.
Yeah, the ship drops a load of some sort.
Yeah, right. So she, now she's like, what the f-? So she's running around, and we end up seeing, like, I thought, okay, this is where we're gonna get the little Cloverfields, right? From the first
Right.
And you don't. Like, it's a completely different looking alien, different which is a creepy, like, it's a creepy alien in its own right.
It's disturbing.
So she, like, gets into, like, this outhouse, I guess. Yeah. I don't really know what else. Yeah. Like, a little barn or a little, like, shed or shack.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then there's the woman. I assume that's the woman.
The woman,
yeah.
In question. So the thing, like, her car alarm is going off because, you know.
The creature.
No, she did.
Oh, yeah.
She brings the creature to her. Yeah. And then she ends up turning it off, and the thing kind of perks up and then goes out. So then she gets into the truck, and at this point, like, the truck gets lifted off the ground. And now this was the part that I had a problem with. So she has the Molotov cocktail.
Right.
And she's leaning out, like, with her ass on the door.
Mm-hmm.
That's impossible. Like, she would have fallen right off that truck. Like, just from the way the truck was positioned and everything. Like, she's holding on with one arm and just lobs this perfect throw into, like, the mouth of this alien ship.
The ship is pretty
organic, I guess.
Yeah, it was like part ship, part creature.
Alien. Yeah, so, like, it's got, like, a mouth on it and opens up, and she chucks the Molotov cocktail, and it blows up. And almost like Independence Day.
Yeah,
like, the one Achilles heel
is
this one little thing. She blows up, and then she gets on. She's okay. She gets into her car, and she takes off down the road, and all of a sudden, her radio kicks on.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, look, we've taken the southern seaboard, I guess is kind of what they say.
Yeah.
But, like, Baton Rouge is okay. Like, Baton Rouge is safe, but we need help in Houston. And this is the point where she was like, I have a choice to make. And she ends up, she's sitting there.
And it's an intersection that has Baton Rouge
Houston
left.
Is that how that works?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So she goes to Houston, and as she's going down the road to Houston, there's a crack of lightning, and you could see a silhouette of another ship.
Much larger. Big.
I guess it could have been bigger.
Looked bigger.
Yeah. In the distance.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I would have liked the Chicago ending better.
Yeah.
I think I would have liked the other ending better just because in that world, we wouldn't have known where this was going.
Right.
You know, like I said, I think branding it Cloverfield in the title,
it undermines it.
It does. They undermine their own film.
And I think
we did it a disservice.
Especially when the alien isn't the same.
Yeah.
Or, like, whatever that creature was.
Whatever they're doing, it doesn't, like, the monster doesn't feel the same. And I know that it's not a direct sequel. It's part of a larger universe. And that's kind of where they're going. So there could be multiple aliens. And that's certainly possible. But because of the timeline issues with the phone, like, I just have a lot of issues. Like, is this really a Cloverfield movie? And on top of it, I think I'd feel better about, like, oh, it's part of a larger universe if I knew that there was another sequel in the pipe. And, like, you're and, like, no, we're going somewhere. But because this wasn't written as a Cloverfield movie, and they were like, we can adapt it to be one, it makes me feel like they're not really trying to make a bunch of these. Although when they cast Bradley Cooper in this little tiny role, it makes you wonder.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Like, you know, if I have to wait 8 years between movies, I don't care enough.
Right.
You know, what did you do this for?
People aren't chomping at the bit for Cloverfield.
Right.
Movies.
You know, and they were initially, like, they thought Super 8 was going to be in that Cloverfield universe.
Super 8's fantastic.
Yeah. And so, but people thought that was going to be a Cloverfield sequel.
Yeah.
So,
wait, what? What was the monster? It wasn't...
There was a monster at the end of it.
Yeah,
but there was originally, like, people thought that was going to tie into Cloverfield.
Right.
Okay.
But overall, I liked the movie. I enjoyed it.
It was
a great ride, and it was really tense in the bunker, and I even liked the alien stuff at the end, but I just kind of felt like, again, they undermined their own film.
Yeah, I know.
They took the wind out of their own sails.
That's the worst part of this, is that, because it's just like, damn. I kind of wish... Like, at no point was I able to say, well, maybe it's not, but it's like, well, but it's
yeah,
it
I was is. Always like, well, clearly, like, oh. Because you called it Cloverfield.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it's like, I wish I didn't know it.
I don't think we talked about when she leaves the property. She hits the mailbox, and you see that the address is 10 Cloverfield Lane. But it makes me wonder if, like, this guy, because they've never told you why the first one was called Cloverfield, if it's some part of
a
military
government thing.
Like, a military project. Was this guy involved with it? Because they said that he worked on satellites.
Correct.
And so, like, maybe somehow he could name his road because he was so rural, or, you know, like,
I see, like, yeah, maybe he was attached to the initial.
It could be, yeah.
But maybe, you know, how subtle would that have been if they would have called it the cellar or whatever else?
And then you see the Cloverfield.
That's our discovery that, oh my God, it's in the Cloverfield universe.
Right.
But even then, it would be like,
but I don't know that I would have made the connection. I'd have been like, well, that's the name of the Clover. But I don't know that I would have been like, oh, this is clearly part of.
Yeah.
I would have just thought it's a coincidence that they didn't foresee.
Yeah. I mean, the cast didn't know that this was a Cloverfield movie.
Yeah.
You know, when they made the movie.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't know it.
They would have charged them more.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But it was like,
oh,
you know,
it's a sequel
for
a franchise? Oh, then here's my fee.
Right, right.
But
I wonder if you'll see any blowback for that. Like when they. Like when the Three Musketeers movie, where they like filmed enough footage and they got two movies out of those actors for the price of one, like they won a lawsuit and you
stupid
can't do that anymore.
Stupid
so.
Richard Lester,
or Crispin Glover when he sued Back to the Future for imitating his likeness.
So
oh, that's right, they did.
Yeah, fake Shimp.
Yeah.
I mean, it does. It's unfortunate because it does undermine it because there is. Also, when she comes out, it's sort of like, oh, so they basically made an entire movie based around the character, Tim Robbins' character in War of the Worlds, because it was...
Right.
You know, because I went straight to the Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds.
Sure. I didn't think Tim Robbins was in the
whole original. That whole section, you know, when... Yeah. You know, because he's like the...
Oh, he is kind of crazy.
Survivalist.
Yeah.
That Cruise ends up killing.
Right. That's right.
In that movie.
I thought it was smart. I thought it was...
Yeah.
Really, you know, it's nice to see something original.
Absolutely.
As original as it could be,
sure,
you know,
intense.
And I kind of thought it was a horror movie at one point.
It kind of was.
Well, it kept you guessing for a long time, and it would have been nice to be able to keep guessing
until the actual
correct
reveal.
Yeah,
yeah. So, like, Dan, do you have a video recovery for us?
I do actually. It's a quick one. It kind of plays along the same lines of Paranoia, which is a 1996. Movie called The Trigger Effect.
Okay.
David Koepp wrote and directed. David Koepp was the writer of Jurassic Park, the screenwriter of Jurassic Park. And this was, I believe, his directorial debut. It has Kyle MacLachlan, Elizabeth Shue, and Dylan McDermott in it.
Or was it Dermot Mulroney.
It's Dermot Mulroney. Damn it. I was like, I always get those two confused. The other one. The more badassier
I'm
of
with
the
you.
Two.
Yeah.
And Dermot Mulroney, not Dylan McDermott, who was in...
Murder House?
And Miracle on 34th Street, remake. And Michael Rooker's in there too.
Miracle on 34th Street was a remake.
Yeah,
the original film was a remake.
I did not know that.
It was actually originally an episode, I think, of like Playhouse 90 or something. Yeah,
Interesting.
So this is a movie where there's a mass power outage, and it's I believe in L.A. And it's basically, you know, what happens, the societal breakdowns that begin to happen, like how far people are willing to go. And right off the bat, the guy is like, their daughter is sick. Cal MacLachlan, he and Elizabeth Shue's daughter are sick. He's supposed to pick up some ear infection medicine. He gets there. Everything's down. People are starting to get a little panicky at the pharmacy, and he ends up stealing the medicine, and
like,
well, you know, and it's like that starts there, and then it starts to get heavier and heavier and a little bit darker, and then there's, you know, like a neighborhood incident where somebody they think is a looter and a rioter, and he ends up getting shot, and maybe he wasn't armed, and it just builds. And it's interesting to watch it. I mean, it's a pretty solid movie. It's hard to find. I mean, it's not streaming anywhere. I was looking for it last night, but it's on like Vudu and you know, iTunes. But it's a more linear movie than this, but it does a good job of capturing sort of the paranoia and how much people are willing to go through in a situation like that. It's a little tad happy at the end, but you know, it's like everything works out. But
it kind of reminds me when you're talking about the paranoia aspect and things kind of escalating and not knowing what to believe. There was a really good Tim Robbins movie called Arlington Road.
Oh, yes. that's a good movie.
Yeah,
that's
one sticks the landing too.
That one does.
Yeah, you know, that movie. You're like, what the hell?
Oh, but like, if you we shouldn't even talk about it.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen Arlington Road.
That's Tim Robbins and Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, that's totally worth checking
so
out too.
Good.
So
yeah, that one.
Yeah, but well, thank you, Dan.
Yeah, no problem.
So I guess that's it for this week. Let's go around the table and everybody can say where to find them.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter at DanGraney67. Graney.
This is Joe. You can also follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Don't forget, if you want to continue the conversation online, we will be there waiting for you at Facebook.com/RealSpoilers or on Twitter at RealSpoilers, or you can email us at RealSpoilers@ReviewSTL.com. Find us on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, and review. We greatly appreciate it. It helps us a lot. I know we say it every week, but we say it every week because it's true. So instead of giving us money, give us your adulation. That's a small price to pay.
It is.
In fact, it's no price at all. So
they're not even groveling, just adulation.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure what we're going to do next week. There's a couple of weird movies coming out, so we'll talk about that amongst ourselves, and you will find out not too long after we do. So thanks for tuning in, and until next time, Rob and Beth die in each other's arms.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.